My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Nikita Reed, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Mark.
It is great to finally have you here.
Right.
We've been trying to record this podcast for months, maybe years. I don't know. It's been a while, but I'm glad that we finally got this coordinated and we got you here. So this is going to be fun. You're a longtime friend. You've been part of the community, the Entree Architect community, for a long time. And so I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time. But let me introduce you to anybody who may not know who you are. You're an award-winning architect with experience throughout the Mid-Atlantic states. Nikita Reed is skilled in the preservation, restoration, and adaptive use of historic buildings with a focus on sustainable strategies in design and construction. In 2012, she co-founded a woman-owned boutique architecture firm that specialized in historic preservation and sustainable design. And then in 2019, she joined Quinn Evans' Baltimore office. And so we want to talk about that a little bit today, about your own firm and the transition to Quinn Evans. You also have a great podcast called Tangible Remnants, where I've learned lots about the intersection of architecture and preservation and sustainability and race and gender. It's amazing that you can get all of those topics together in one podcast, and it makes sense. I love it. I love the podcast. I love the conversations that you have over there at Tangible Remnants. So I highly recommend everybody go subscribe and listen to Tangible Remnants. Let's start with your origin story. Let's go back to where you discovered your passion for architecture, who or what inspired you to become an architect, and then share that story to where we are now.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks for having me. And I'm excited to be able to have this conversation because you're right. I've been a longtime follower and lurker in the community and posting some things. So it's great to be here. So I knew from an early age that I wanted to be an architect. In high school, I took some AutoCAD drafting courses. And I think part of that came from when I was younger, I spent some time in DC on the weekends. And so I remember being confused as to why there were vacant buildings with homeless people sleeping outside of them. And so for me, I never really understood why that was the case, particularly when buildings need people and people need buildings. And so I also had some friends who lived in Pittsburgh. And so when I was younger, I would take the train from DC to Pittsburgh, and the train would go through a lot of vacant areas, vacant cities, or places that used to be really vibrant, but no longer were. And so I found myself thinking about what did those places used to be? What made them start to decline? What could they be if they were reimagined? So I've just kind of always had this thing for dilapidated buildings. It's always been a both and for me for architecture. So when I went to UVA for architecture undergrad, I remember being surprised that we weren't learning really about existing buildings. And I was like, all right, well, new buildings, but what about what's already here? How do we work with that? And so in between my years of undergrad and the summers of undergrad, and also before I went back to grad school, I worked for a preservation architect in DC, and he eventually became my former business partner. But I kind of got more exposed to preservation architecture through some of the projects we worked on there. And then I decided that I needed to go back to grad school to actually learn more about preservation and more about the existing environment, because it is, you know, preservation and architecture, as similar as they are to me, they are different fields, different laws, different regulations. So I went to Penn and then did a master's in historic preservation as well as a master's in architecture. And then I was like, well, while I'm here, I might as well get some more degrees. So then I also got a certificate in ecological architecture. So that's kind of became more of the framework and the credentials for starting to blend sustainability, preservation, and architecture all together. And it was funny in one of those, like, what? Because my cohort had my preservation cohort at Penn, they were often like, oh, architects can't design. Frank Lloyd Wright's buildings leaked. And, you know, just you know, not the highest regard for architects. And then my architecture cohort were very much like, oh, preservationists just get in the way of progress, you know, always holding things up. It's the hysterical preservation committee, all of those things. But then it for me was like, well, preservationists, architects kind of give us job security. You know, we got to preserve the things that are there. And then architects, I would hope that we're designing things that we're wanting preservationists to preserve in the next 50 years. So it's like, we both need each other, and it's a both and as opposed to an either or. And then conversely, when I meet preservationists who think sustainability is this other thing that doesn't touch sustainability, that drives me nuts. Or architects who are like, well, why does it have to be sustainable? It's going to cost so much money. And, you know, it's just there seems to be a disconnect. So anyways, that's that. So that those thoughts are what led me to then co-found a firm in 2012 with my former business partner. And we called it Encore Sustainable Design because we wanted buildings to have an encore, kind of like, you know, another chance at performing again. And so that was our way. We were trying to incorporate sustainability into the name and all that fun stuff. And part of what even gave me the, I guess, the courage to go out on my own at that time, there was a personal tragedy, and I just kind of realized that I could die at any time. So it's like, I got to start doing what I want. So at 27, sure, let's start an architecture firm. And my business partner at the time, he was 38. He's 38 years older than me. So he'd been in the game for a while. And so it was good to be able to work together and have some lessons learned from that experience, but also realizing the way that he'd been doing things wasn't the way that we could continue doing things because technology had changed, the world had changed. So we had to evolve. And so anyways, I did that for about 7 years, and then got this really great opportunity to join Quinn Evans Baltimore office, which was the legacy Chobin Holbach office. And it's funny because one of my former employees told me that when Quinn Evans bought Chobin Holbach, apparently I made some offhanded comment like, oh, I wish that they would buy us too. And then
surprise.
Right, exactly. Then like 2 years later, get the offer. And so it ended up that I actually ended up being the only one from the firm leaving to Quinn Evans. So Encore Sustainable Architects is still going. And, you know, it's been a journey. And joining Quinn Evans has been a roller coaster ride and a great time. And I'm really glad that I made the jump when I did, just because it's given me the flexibility to do more of the work that I want to keep doing. And also it's given me a sense of looking at going from a very small practice to then being part of a firm that's part of the large firm roundtable with AIA. So the spectrum there has been really interesting.
Yeah. 27 years old was very, yeah, very young to yeah, start an architecture firm.
Yes.
I was 29. My wife and I launched our firm when we were 29, and we thought we were young. Do you have any advice or suggestions to young architects who want to start their own architecture firm very young like that?
Yep. And so a couple things. So one is networking. That became really crucial to the growth of the firm and also establishing myself as someone who knew what they were talking about, basically. Because being young, being Black, being female, there was a lot of, who are you? Are you really an architect? Well, you know, you can't say you're an architect if you're not licensed. It's like, oh, I'm aware of that, and I'm licensed, but thank you for like checking to make sure that I'm, you know, complying with the AIA Code of Ethics. But it was also just a lot of stereotypes that I had to break, and networking helped that, because then it became once you start to know people, you start to realize that people really like to hire people that they know. It's less about you being the best designer and having the lowest price. It's more about who do you know who can make the introduction. So my tip for networking for young folks, if you will, everyone hates it. That's tip number one. Everyone hates it. Everyone feels as awkward as you do. You're not weird for feeling that way. It's just that it's just awkward talking to people you don't know. One of the things I used to do was I would stand in the drink line because most of these events have alcohol. And I would gently, very gently, bump into someone and then introduce myself. Be like, oh, sorry. Oh, hey, by the way, I'm Nikita. And then, you know, go to the front of the line, get a drink, and then wait 5 minutes and do it again. And then as you're talking to someone, then you kind of open up the conversation and kind of start to face the rest of the crowd and be like, well, hey, is there anyone else here you'd recommend that I talk to? So it's a way to kind of give yourself an out of the conversation, help expand your network, and also just connect a little bit more. Granted, all of that is pre-COVID, so we'll see how networking evolves as we're staying digital, staying safe, trying to figure out what the world is like going forward. But also making sure that when you go to different lectures or events, connect with people on LinkedIn and send a little note, say, hey, just saw this presentation here. Great meeting you there, just to really establish that connection. And then also volunteer. I kind of collect boards, it seems. Like I'm on a number of boards, and I've been doing that since I started the firm. And so things from USGBC or even APT, which is the Association for Preservation Technology. It's like the AIA, but for preservationists. So for all you architects out there, you now know what APT is, if you didn't already. And then also there's one of the other boards I'm on now is the Zero Net Carbon Collaboration. And so that is a board or a organization where we're trying to bring together basically climate action in existing and historic buildings, recognizing that we need to have existing and historic buildings in the conversation to really make a difference. And so that group has members from Architecture 2030, AIA, as well as the RAIC, US ICOMOS, APT, and then we're also doing things with the Climate Heritage Network. So there's a lot of different organizations that are doing things centered around the built environment and sustainability, but it's a lot of different silos. So we're trying to be a clearinghouse to help make more connections. So you know, networking and getting your name out there, present at conferences, all of the things that a lot of people are like, oh, public speaking is the worst, or publishing or meeting people I don't know. It's if you're starting your own business, you have to get out from behind the computer, get out from the design so much, and actually focus on the business side of architecture and not just the design side of it.
Did you ever experience imposter syndrome as a young architect?
Oh my gosh, all the time.
What do you do to overcome that at that age?
Yeah, so at that age, it was a lot of reminding myself that I needed to give myself permission to take up space. I feel like as a young person, as a woman, I had a tendency to try and shrink, to be like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't say anything. Maybe I shouldn't speak up. Maybe I shouldn't be here because, you know, I don't have the years. That person has way more gray hairs than I do, so I have to defer to them. But then realizing that everyone is trying to figure it out and kind of faking it. I feel like we're all muddling our way through this. So once I realized that the adults, if you will, don't have all the answers, and I was also an adult, and it was okay that I didn't have all the answers, and I could show up and be as authentic as I could be and admit that, you know, I'm still learning, but here's what I know. And kind of once I removed the expectation of having all the answers, then I felt like much less like an imposter and more like I was actually doing the work that I needed to do to continue on my journey. So it's been, it's still a struggle. Even today, it's still kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm talking to Mark Arla Page on this podcast. Like, what? So it still happens. But it's still just I'm reminding myself that, yeah, I'm allowed to do this. I'm allowed to take up space. I'm worthy. Those are all thoughts that have to continually be on repeat.
Yeah, that's good advice. I'm 51 years old and I still feel it.
Yeah.
I still feel it. I started when I was 29, and I felt when I was 29 that I was, you know, I had to prove myself as a young architect, that I was always going to be perceived as somebody with not enough experience. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, I still get those feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, and I still also think that I'm this young architect. I'm not that young architect anymore, but I still have those same feelings. And so it's important for everybody who's listening, no matter what your age is that is just normal. That's being a human being. Mm-hmm. And coming up with ways like networking and experience and doing it anyway and learning that it wasn't so painful.
Right.
All those lessons are really important. What are some other things when you launched your own firm? What were some of the things that helped you build that business? Were there certain steps that you took in order to establish that business as a successful business?
Yeah, so the biggest thing I learned was systems and the need to create them. And so, as I mentioned, my former business partner had been in business for many decades. But like many small firm architects, he was kind of running it with a couple different spreadsheets and QuickBooks, and then nothing was really connected or talking to each other. And so I remember when we hired our first employee, we're like, okay, well, now we really need to start tracking time and figuring out where time is going. And so the idea of, oh, we're going to have our employees do their timesheets on one of our computers and QuickBooks, and I'll just log off for 30 minutes. And then I was like, that doesn't make sense. Like, it's like, there has to be a better way to get our employees to do their timesheets so that we don't have to stop working. And so then we ended up using, Harvest for a little bit. And then we tried T-Sheet. So we kept trying and evolving different systems. And then the other thing that drove me nuts was the number of spreadsheets that weren't connected and were often conflicted. So between like our contact list, our project list, our, the mailing. So just there were a number of spreadsheets that weren't talking to each other. And so then I spent a good amount of time researching a couple different architecture project management tools. So like Wrike and Liquid Planner and BQE. And so the number of different ones. The struggle I ran into is we were too small for a lot of those systems, because some of it was like, oh, you have to have 10 licensed users minimum. And it's like, we have five. We couldn't customize it exactly the way we needed to. And I will say one of the advantages of having a business partner who is 38 years older than you is that you have to make sure the technology is something simple enough that they can use and they're not going to get frustrated with. The litmus test. I was like, well, can he use it? And if he can, then okay, we'll go with it. After a bunch of trial and error, came along and I found Smartsheet, which has been, I've been really obsessed with it for the past couple of years now. But it's been great because it's allowed me, or at the firm, it allowed me to create project templates and connect the projects to the clients, to the invoicing and just connect the systems. So it was much more streamlined. I could do dashboards, I could do survey forms, and without having to do a lot of different softwares, and it was relatively cheap, and you could do the business license for three users, and that worked out. So that became a big push in terms of me creating the business in a way where I felt like I would be able to take a vacation, because one of the things that I think is often glamorized or romanticized when starting a business is, oh, I'm going to be my own boss. But it's like, yes, but if you don't have the system set up, then you don't have a business, you have a job. Because if you can't leave and go away for a couple weeks and let the business keep running without you, then you really don't have that freedom that you're searching for when you're thinking, I'm going to own my own business. So it was really important to me to be able to create something that I knew would be able to run when I was gone. And also have some redundancy and not feel like I had to be the bottleneck for everything. Because that is one of the things that I underestimated, I guess, as a business owner, is just the decision fatigue that comes from having to be involved in so many different things and make the decisions about so many things. So I needed to be able to give myself a little bit of grace and a little bit of a way to say, hey, here's how you do it. Here's a video for it. This video lives on this dashboard and Smartsheet. So then when I was onboarding new employees, I didn't have to keep saying the same thing over and over again.
Let's take a break to thank our sponsors for their support of this episode. BIM can be important for your next project, but it's not the only thing you need for your next project. That's why it's important that 95% of manufacturers who offer free BIM files on RCAT also offer another type of data or information that your project may need. That means 95% of the products with BIM also have CAD files, are in a specification, in a patented spec wizard, or may have product information to help you make the right selection. So stop going to a site with just BIM and go to RCAT.com. to get everything you need for your next project for free and without registering. No cost, no credit card, no email, it's free. That's RCAT.com, ARCAT.com. When building a business you're passionate about, it's easy to feel like there aren't enough hours in the day. And if you're doing all the invoicing and accounting on your own, you're probably spending time on work you don't love. FreshBooks is built for business owners like us. It's the all-in-one accounting software that saves entrepreneurs and freelancers up to 11 hours a week. That's 11 hours that you could spend nailing a client pitch, designing your next project, or building your business as an architect. from preparing, sending, and following up on invoices, to tracking and managing expenses, to processing online payments, FreshBooks automates and simplifies all the tough and annoying parts of running your own business. So try FreshBooks for free for 30 days. No credit card required. Go to entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section and get more time back to build the business you love. That's entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So everything, all of your systems lived on Smartsheet? Can you explain the platform of Smartsheet so we can understand what it is and how it works?
So it is cloud-based, and it's kind of like Excel on steroids a little bit. You also have the ability to create dashboards, which you can then, and the dashboard is basically, think of it like a web page where you can drag and drop shortcuts or links, videos, images, you can type raw text on there. So it just gives you a lot of flexibility to be able to customize it to look and be the way you want it to be. And so one of the nice things that I was able to do was, in addition to setting up kind of a project template sheet. So I took the, I think it was AIA D200, which is like their checklist of things, was able to make that a template that was interactive. So you could go through every project and delete or add to the checklist, and then add a project schedule with milestones and put all that stuff into a dashboard. So very quickly, I could see where we are in the project, what's happening with it. But then if I wanted to click in and see, okay, well, what are the tasks that need to happen? Where are we financially? There are just different ways to get to the same information. And that was the other thing that I really appreciated about Smartsheet, was that you can put the information in once. And if you set it up correctly, then you don't have to enter the same project name 15 different times. So I was trying to think of ways to make it so it was a little less redundant, and I was spending more time doing the work and less time managing the work.
Yeah. You had mentioned that putting together systems allowed you to get away, to go on vacation and be confident that the firm is going to run well. Mm-hmm. That feeling, right? When you finally get to that point where you can take time away and know that everything's going to be okay, right? You have the people in the right places.
Yep.
You have the systems in the right place, and you can take time away and like literally stop and turn your brain off and turn off the computer and shut down the phone and go be with your family and your friends and go enjoy yourself.
Right.
That feeling is amazing.
Yes. I concur. And it's one of those things where I think, particularly with some of the other small firm architects that I've talked to, it's often seen the idea of setting up systems standard operating procedures sometimes is perceived as being restrictive.
Right.
Or, I got into this for architecture, I just want to focus on design. But it's like, if you have the systems in place, then you actually can focus on the design so that you're not having to spend your time reminding your employees how to do something on the administrative side, because you have something that you can point to and say, hey, it's there, go check there for that information. So just being able to set up the system so you can actually free yourself for more time to do the work that you want to do, design or networking or whatever it is.
Or vacation.
It's so important. Exactly, vacation. Not to be undersold, absolutely.
I've been preaching that for years here at the podcast, and it is fantastic to hear about Smartsheet, because I didn't know about Smartsheet before I started talking with you. And actually I haven't explored it at all, but every architect, small firm architect, they're all looking for that simple product that brings it all together, and I could just build out the systems, right? A lot of us have used Excel or Google Sheets to build out systems. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of a system or a program that's easy to use and can sort of go just above where the typical spreadsheets can go and be more interactive and more automated.
Yeah. And one of the things that I also really like is that it gives you the opportunity to do forms, and the forms then tied back directly to a database. So a couple of years ago, I actually surveyed the Entree Architect community to find out, how are you tracking your time and a couple other things. And so I made a dashboard, I did a report, and actually I'll send you the links to that so we can include those as well. But it was a way to really easily show the information, and all I had to do was like, send out the link and everything else kind of came together. So it's been really fun to explore Smartsheet. And I also, I should mention this, that I nerd out on systems and I love a good spreadsheet, but I also like adapted it. So I'm using it for my personal time as well. So like I can, my whole calendar and my task or all that stuff is there. Cause it's, you know, I needed a system that was, I could use for everything. And that's kind of, I've evolved it to be that.
Yeah. And you built it all out for your architecture firm. You're using it personally now. Do you use it at all at Quinn Evans now?
I do for some of our projects. So for instance, one of the projects that we worked on was the DC civil rights or African American civil rights sites in DC. And so we had a public engagement piece and a public comment. And so we use Smartsheet to both be the database of all of the sites that we found around the city. And the database includes photos and different checkboxes and types of things like that. And then we also used it for the dashboard so that we had a form where if people had sites they wanted to suggest for us to research, they could submit the site and it went to our database. You know, they could find out more information about different events that were happening, contact different people. So we used Smartsheet for that web-facing dashboard as well. So we're using it for things like that. And then I've been talking to our IT department. But, you know, we're a little bit more of a Teams office, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Microsoft got the hook,
you know?
In it. But you with Smartsheet, you were such a fan and it worked for your firm. You also built a course around it.
I did.
For other small firms.
I did. And it's called Smartsheet for Architects. And I built it probably like 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah. And it's one of those things where I just kind of built it in my spare time because I was like, this is amazing. I need to use it and I need to tell people how great it is. And then I just kind of built out the course and just let it be. And, you know, I've had probably like 50 or so people go through the course so far, which is awesome. But I haven't been marketing it. So this is kind of cool that it's, you know, thanks for shout out.
Yeah. And this wasn't part, right. It wasn't the plan when I invited you.
Exactly.
I just thought, hey, we should talk about this because this, right. we wanted to talk about systems. And then I remembered that you had that course.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just mention it.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where it's, I built it out just because I felt like it was such a great tool. And after trying so many different tools, I mean, I even tried like Frank and Reich and a whole bunch of them. The one that I was also starting to look at was Ingenious.io. And then I also know it's, there's a bunch of them that are out there, but there is still this kind of hole of project management software for small firm architects that does everything that we need to do. And you know, even with like invoicing, which I know is also the bane of many of our existences, you know, just in addition to kind of the awkwardness of networking, I know there's also that awkwardness of asking for people to pay you the money that they owe you, but it's a need. And so one of the things that I use Smartsheet for was tracking the invoices. So I'd have reminders of, okay, what do we need to invoice this month? Do I have the invoices from the subs? Where are we in the contract? And basically use Smartsheet to fill the gap for all of the things that I couldn't do in QuickBooks, because QuickBooks isn't great with kind of the two-way connection and all that kind of stuff. So it was being able to see where we were and also have a very easy way to see how much have we actually build this month? What are we expecting to build next month? So I could actually have some sort of forecast going on, so I'd get a sense of where we were for cash flow and what was expected.
This is fantastic. And I have so many other questions that I want to ask you. Because I love historic preservation. It's I never pursued it, and adaptive use was something that I always was interested in and just never pursued it. My mom always took us on tours wherever we went. We were always going to some historic building, and so it's in my blood. To sort of look at historic buildings. And I had very similar experiences when I was young. I lived near New York City, and I remember driving, you know, through the city and seeing entire blocks abandoned. Mm-hmm. And I had very similar feelings about them. And so I would love, if you're interested, I'd love for you to come back and talk about historic preservation and sustainability, because I'm also curious on how do you sort of get sustainability and historic buildings to work, right? Because they're not originally designed to be sustainable. So how do you do that? So if you're interested, I'd love to have you come back and talk about that stuff too.
Absolutely. And real quick on that, you know, it depends on how you're defining sustainability in that. So reusing is inherently sustainable.
Yeah,
but then being able to make sure that you are meeting energy code without destroying the historic character of the building,
right,
and helping to continue a community's sense of place is something that's also really exciting. So I would love to come back and talk about all of those things.
Great, great. I know you're passionate about it, and I love talking about that. So we'll definitely have you come back. Hopefully we can schedule a time and do that. And so we'll definitely have you come back and we'll talk about that. Her name is Nikita Reed. You can learn more about Nikita and everything that she's doing, the podcast, Tangible Remnants. Everything she's doing is at NikitaReed.com. We'll have a link to that on the show notes. If you want to check out the course, Smart Sheet for Architects, it's smartsheet4architects.com. We'll have a link to that as well in the show notes. You can follow Nikita on Instagram and Facebook at Tangible Remnants. If you're interested in zero net carbon collaboration, you talked about that a little bit early on. It's zncollaboration.org. You can learn all about that and how you combined sustainability and historic buildings.
Yes.
I'm going to go there and look at that myself. Nikita, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really enjoyed this. I loved hearing your story and how you built your firm and how you moved on to Quinn Evans and how you felt that systems are the way to do this. It's something that I talk about all the time, but I think understanding that there is a simple tool to find that, right? That's why we also started building out simple systems at Entree Architect, is because I think that's the answer, right? It's find the simple way to do it.
Absolutely. Just
build these little systems that work, and those little systems over time become big systems, and then you can have systems in your firm, because it takes time to build all those systems.
It really
but
does.
It also saves you time and allows you to go on vacation and allows you to do better architecture. And so something we all have to do. So Nikita, thank you for sharing here today at Entree Architect Podcast.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. That's how you could help grow Entree Architect Podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, Arcat and FreshBooks, for their support of this episode. Links to all our sponsors and all our resources that we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode, found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. That's you. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. Go there now. And check out Entree Architect Academy membership. Ready to edit business resources for architects, live monthly business training for architects, a supportive architect community, and Simple Systems, our new business system program developed for you, the small firm entrepreneur architect. It's all waiting for you right now at Entree Architect Academy membership, including AIA Continuing Education Learning Units. Yep, they are there too. Entree Architect is there for you. Come join me and hundreds of your entrepreneur architect friends. Visit entrearchitect.com/join to enroll today. Thanks for listening today. Love, learn, and share what you know.